WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I could not be more pleased to be sitting opposite two really talented gentlemen from the world of music here in southeastern Wisconsin and counterparts from Parkside and Carthage, in a sense. I am sitting opposite today, first of all, a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage, Dr. Peter Dene, who is the coordinator of Carthage's sprawling annual Christmas festival. And also with us today in the studio, Dr. James Kinchin, who is the director of choral activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, who this coming weekend is going to be presiding over two performances of Handel's sprawling oratorio Messiah. Yes. So all kinds of big and incredibly exciting things are going on this weekend, and that's what we're going to be talking about today on today's morning show. So first of all, Dr. Peter Dene, Dr. James Kinchin, we welcome you to the morning show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Before we talk about the big events that are coming up this weekend, I think it would be good to spend at least a couple of minutes talking about this pandemic that is still very much with us and the way in which it has made the whole business of making music and singing in particular a bit more complicated. And although we are in a different phase of the pandemic than we once were, of course, it is still very much with us. So, Dr. Kinchin, let's begin with you in terms of Parkside and how you have managed to weather this pandemic and carry on with the business of making music. What do things feel like now in December of 2021?
Well, they feel different from what we would have expected them to be. But at the same time, there's not a single time that I meet with the choir, there's not a single time that I conduct a rehearsal without being really deeply thankful for the opportunity we have to be there in person. I think that, you know, we've got mitigations in place that make what we do reasonably safe. I often quote, and I tell people, I set them up by telling them one of the great philosophers of our present time, and of course it's the NBA, National Basketball Association Commissioner, Adam Silver, who back when they were trying to decide what to do with basketball games, made the statement that was so short, so succinct, and yet so profound: no option is risk-free. And so, you know, we know that, but at the same time, there is masking, and that's a campus-wide mandate. Everybody's got to have a mask on when they come into the building. And we also try to have people more distanced than would normally be the case. So we've actually, in our rehearsal room, we've actually moved the risers out so that we've got more flexibility with the floor space. And, you know, when we are rehearsing as we normally will rehearse, which is sort of like nonstop, you're saying you stop, you're saying you stop, we try to limit the time that we're in a space so that the emissions don't have a chance to accumulate, as the science shows that they will, particularly as you get close to the 60-minute mark of you know, being out of space, especially if you do not have adequate ventilation. And we are asking students to observe protocols. If they've got symptoms or if they're ill, they stay away. They get tested. Testing is easy to come by. It's free for students on campus. And I think there is something, I'm happy to say, something of a communitarian feel among students who want to do the right thing by each other. Sometimes I'll get texts or emails, I'm having some issues, maybe it's a cold, but I don't know, so I'm going to stay away and I'm going to get tested. And you know, and so I appreciate the students doing what they're doing. So, but that's what's happening. And we keep singing behind the mask and try to have good vowels behind the mask and try to have articulate consonants behind the mask.
Right, you know, all of that all stuff. Of that. Right. And from what I understand, Parkside, numerically speaking, has done quite well in terms of COVID.
So you have
a lot to be proud of in terms
We're real pleased and continue to keep our fingers crossed and our hands clasped.
Very good. Dr. Dene, I suspect a lot of what Dr. Kinchin just spelled out in terms of what's been happening at Parkside sounds very familiar to you.
Exactly. Yep, we're doing the exact same things and with the same results. And I think the two things I'd add, and I'm guessing it's the same at Parkside, is we've limited the seating for audience members. We're cut in half in the chapel. And there was a second thing, but I lost track of what it was. But the seniors, so happy to be able to do a concert live in their senior year, their Christmas festival. I'm sure your students are all happy to be doing a tradition in person.
As opposed to last year, last year's seniors, their final Christmas festival, for instance, was beautiful, but not.
They were grateful to have something, but it wasn't close to what being in person and doing the festival three nights in a row and all of those things that are a video is not, you know, it's not community. So it's not just the concert, but it's the community building up to that concert, and then the three nights of concerts and two nights are a whole experience that lasts in your memory forever, I think.
It reminds me of what the director of the Guthrie said very early in the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but Doug Instanis has quoted him on many times. And, of course, there are a lot of good decisions that can be made, but one of the things this Guthrie director said is, creating some kind of video, that's something valuable, but that's not theater.
Right. Yeah.
It is something else, and maybe that's something that a theater company should do. But the Guthrie, at least for most of the pandemic, made the decision that we're a theater and we're about theater, and we will do theater when we can do theater. And in a sense, this feels parallel to that. Yeah. What happened last year was valuable, but it's not at all the same as what we are accustomed to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My other understanding is, I can't speak for Parkside, but I can speak, I think, for Carthage, that remarkably, even though there are ways in which singing together or playing instruments together is among the riskiest of behaviors, and you really need careful protocols, but my understanding is that the numbers of, for instance, the music population at Carthage are better than the overall student body, even though they have engaged in activity like singing and playing together. That nevertheless, our COVID numbers as a department have been better.
It seems to me that's the case. That I mean, I can say that in my rehearsals and in my classes, actually, that I teach, I almost every time I talk about what they do outside of class, and that I need everybody to stay healthy and to wear masks even when it feels uncomfortable to wear a mask, and that everybody else is not, and that it's that I want them to be there, and so they have to be as diligent in as we are in rehearsal around other people and outside of that space.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we have Dr. Peter Dene from Carthage and Dr. James Kinchin from UW Parkside talking not only about the past months and the challenges that they have represented, but also about the big performances that are coming up this weekend at their respective schools. At Carthage, the Carthage Annual Christmas Festival, and which the theme of which this year is O Come With to Us, Abide With Us.
Right.
And this weekend also, two performances of Handel's greatest oratorio, Messiah, at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Let's talk first, Dr. Kinchin, about the decision to do Messiah. Mm-hmm. Unlike the Christmas festival, the Messiah, I don't think, occurs every single year.
No, it doesn't.
Right. So was it just time to do it, or was it a more sort of concerted decision that we need to do Messiah this fall?
Well, I think it's fair to say it was a combination of both. And you're right. Messiah has been happening on a three-year cycle. And actually, December 2020, was when we were to do Messiah again. But, of course, you know, everything was dark at that point. And so with a lot of really, really well, deeply appreciated encouragement from our dean of the College of Arts and Humanities, Leslie Hines-Walker, we decided that we're going to do Messiah. We're going to do Messiah. Now, part of the impetus for that decision also is that this marks the 10th anniversary of the Rita Talent Pickin Regional Center for Arts and Humanities, which we affectionately and more succinctly refer to as the Rita. And so we knew we just had to celebrate that because it's been such a gem for us. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Messiah that we did in 2011 was the first formal performance in the Rita. We essentially opened Bedford Hall, which is our acoustical jewel, in the Rita. And so we wanted to come and to enjoy that and to open our doors to the community and say, come and let's celebrate this very signal anniversary with us. And so those things kind of came together. And so then it was a matter of figuring out how we could do it. We had sort of determined how we could sing safely together. Because, Ian, as you alluded to earlier, singing is really the most highly emissive musical activity that we do. It's at the top of the scale. You'll remember back when the pandemic was first beginning and we were just discovering what this, you know, flu-like, pneumonia-like virus was, that people in the Northwest who were singing together were getting sick and many of them were dying. Mm. And so we came to understand why that is. And I tell people all the time that emitting air is not a byproduct of singing. It's sort of central to singing, to what we do.
Can't really do it without it.
We can't do it without it. And so, we had to figure out how we could be safe, relatively speaking, in that way as well. And so, here we are at the point of doing Messiah, and just so happy, so pleased, so proud to be doing it.
We want to mention that it's two performances, Friday night at 7 p.m. and Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Saturday night at 7 p.m. Yes. And Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. And Saturday night's performance will also be live streamed.
Yes.
For those who cannot be there in person to experience that. And we'll play a couple excerpts in just a moment and talk a little more about the work.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Dene, you've already alluded to the fact that last year's Carthage Christmas Festival went on as best as could be done within the really strict protocols of the fall of 2020. So this year, what has it felt like to return to something that much more resembles normalcy in terms of Christmas festival?
Oh, it's felt pretty amazing. I at least for me. I can't remember when I started. I think 2007 was the first time I was the festival director. And just having 1 year off, it was trying to remember everything that needs to be done and to get done. And I'm still scrambling a little bit as we get to that time. But I think it's been a wonderful experience. The students are incredibly excited. I think it feels like it's more excited than they've been for it ever before. I mean, I don't remember so many students coming up to me after rehearsals or during the day and just thanking me and wanting to talk about the festival so I think the act of doing it is really good for our community and good for our students.
Right. Yeah. One of the things, of course, that's complicated about it is that it involves all of the choirs, as well as the band, as well as the orchestra.
That's right.
And that in and of itself is kind of an air traffic control.
Yeah,
kind of,
and we have Professor Rick Biela, who retired from Lawrence in Texas, who's here. So, and he's been a fantastic colleague in addition, but also kind of helping him to understand what this is and what I think about it when we've had different, like Ed Kawakami joining and when Eduardo was here his first time. And even our freshmen, you don't know what it is until you do it. And and so it's starting to make sense to Rick as we go through the rehearsals. But I think tonight, our first dress rehearsal, he'll have a complete understanding, as will our freshmen. This is how it works, and this is why it's so special and different than just a regular concert performance.
How it all adds up in the
right,
end.
Right.
Very good. We're speaking today on The Morning Show with Dr. Peter Dene from the music faculty of Carthage College. He's here to talk about Carthage's Christmas Festival, three performances this weekend, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon, all of which, sadly, are sold out.
That's right.
But via the wonders of modern technology, the Christmas Festival can still be experienced via live stream.
Yes.
And is that any of the three performances?
That's all three, yeah.
All three performances. Yes. And you can go to carthage.edu for more information or to access that and experience it. And we have two performances of Handel's great oratorio Messiah this weekend at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, Saturday night at 7 p.m., which is also live streamed, and then Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. in the beautiful, sparkling Francis Bedford Concert Hall to celebrate the 10th anniversary of that beautiful space. I'm astounded it's been 10 years. Yep. I remember because I was very honored to MC the opening ceremony for the Rita, but I never would dream it would have been 10 years. So time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
Speaking of fun, I have cooked up some fun, Dr. Kinchin, here. I want to play an excerpt from two very different recordings of the first part of the overture to Handel's Messiah. And it's just to give a sense of just how differently this work can be approached. And then we're going to hear what your plans are in terms of not just for the overture, but in general, how you plan to approach this particular work. So here are two different recordings of of the opening section of the overture to Handel's oratorio Messiah. So that interesting pairing of recordings, that's actually one that goes twice as fast as the other. The first was Eugene Ormandy. The second was some performance in the Netherlands. But two dramatically different approaches to the very same music. So where is Dr. James Kinchin's Messiah going to fall within that scope of very romantic and rich and very, very light and feathery and quick?
Well, I think overall he is somewhere in a middle ground, I think. And so what, you know, your choices were just spot on, because the first one represented a tradition that comes out of the 19th century. You know, Messiah performances had gotten bigger numerically, they had gotten plumper. And that was also this kind of aesthetic perspective that you, in whatever age you were in, could improve on what had gone on before you. So you know, we'll do Handel, but we'll do Handel better than Handel could have done Handel. You know, that kind of mindset, you know what I mean? And so, you know, that's more of a big, ponderous, and sort of heavy approach. And then, you know, from about the mid-century, particularly the latter part of the 20th century, we began to get these, you know, the Devil Mariners and those people who began to do these messiahs that were, like, almost breathtaking in terms of the agility and the speed and all. And I tell people that my experience in making the decision to do Messiah and getting the best advice I ever got on doing Messiah happened on a trip when I was in Sweden visiting with an entourage of choral directors, and met Anders Ervo, who at that time directed the Stockholm Bach Choir. And I didn't have a whole lot of time with him, but the advice he gave was spot on. And one of the things he cautioned against was speed for the sake of speed. Which, by the way, if I were to tell my story, which I rolled out, and I won't tell the whole thing, but on an occasion on that same trip, I was guest of another director, you know, who had this sports car, which was about 2 feet off the ground or something like that. The top of it was about, you know, and so he decided, with me, you know, terrified, that he would sort of put it to its paces. And I mean, you know, we were going like, and so the metaphor that emerged is that you don't go as fast as you can go just because you can go that fast.
Ah.
Okay. And so it sort of resonated with me. So there are tempi that we take that aren't like really, really fast. Now, the overture, I have done the overture as notated, which for the listener who might have an idea about this, is the dotted quarter followed by the eighth. Da, 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 da. And I have done it double dotted, which was your last excerpt. Mm. And I like both. This time we're going to do the single dotted, not a slow tempo, and because the direction that Handel gives on the score is grave, which for me means, you know, more than tempo, it's like gravitas.
Mm. So you know, depth and fullness.
He had this audience of people that he wanted to impress with this work not being kind of frivolous theater entertainment, but being something appropriate for the season, and the season that he always did it in was Lent.
Right, and making it deeply meaningful,
exactly.
Reflective of these tremendous scriptural texts,
exactly.
And
yeah.
So on.
Yeah.
There's something to be said. I mean, of course, prevailing taste now is that first recording by Eugene Ormandy is wrong, in quotation marks.
Yes,
or not as right as that second one, but his was certainly much more grave than the second one that we listened to.
And there's something, and we
can kind of understand that approach.
Yeah.
Are you doing all of Messiah?
We are doing all of Messiah.
Wow. I remember the first time I soloed with you in Messiah, it was going to be all of it. And I remember being kind of staggered at the thought because it's such a huge, huge work. But because it fits together so seamlessly, it's really amazing how when you do it all, it almost flows more quickly than when you sort of chop it up and abridge it and so on. And then it's kind of a clunkier experience somehow.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that just, you know, I kind of laugh at that, but you're absolutely right. And that says that Handel kind of knew what he was doing. You know, he had had a whole lot of experience doing stage work. You know, up to that point, opera had been his forte.
Right.
And of course, you know, with opera, there has to be some real sense of how things connect together, how things flow, and the larger architecture. And he brought that kind of expertise to his writing of Messiah. And when you do the whole thing, it works. Mm. It works wonderfully. I was afraid the first time. I was seeing people dozing in their seats or leaving out after the hallelujah or whatever. But audiences have continued to be engaged by this great masterwork.
Well, and I should think, as we were kind of talking about before, that at least generally speaking, people are going to have a tremendous appreciation beyond anything they've ever had before at the joy of being able to come and experience this, because for the vast majority of us, it's been a good 2 years since we've been able to experience a live performance.
Yeah.
I suspect you've gathered a wonderful quartet of soloists for that portion of this.
Yes, you know, we're real pleased to be able to share these wonderfully, wonderfully talented men and women with our audiences. Doing our soprano will be Jennifer Shannon, who is a former student and somebody that I'm tremendously proud of. And
people will know her name maybe better as Jennifer Hansen,
back in her student days.
Yes.
But she's been singing beautifully. Our alto will be covered by a newcomer to Messiah and performances of that scope, but another former student, Renee Owens. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Owens is going to do the all the alto work, including that he was despised, which caused one of the clerics in Handel's time, having heard Miss Sibber do it, to just stand up after she'd done it and say, "Woman, for this all thy sins are forgiven thee."
Mm.
It was such a moving experience. Tenor is going to be Aaron Short, who's sung it with us before and is phenomenal.
Yeah, wonderful singer.
And a new colleague will be singing the bass arias, and it's Bill McMurray, who is in the Chicago area.
Very good. Yeah. We're going to listen to just a little bit of one of the most sparkling arias, solo arias in this work, and especially appropriate for this season. So this is the soprano aria Rejoice Greatly. That's one of the high points of the Christmas portion of Handel's Messiah. And this is a soprano you've probably heard of, Miss Kathleen Battle.
I know her.
Rejoice greatly, rejoice, O daughter of Zion, O daughter of Zion, rejoice, rejoice, rejoice. Rejoice greatly, shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, the King cometh unto thee. Behold, the King cometh unto thee, cometh unto thee.
Just a bit of that wonderful aria, Rejoice Greatly, from the Christmas portion of Handel's Messiah. And again, the Musical Forces of UW-Parkstead will be doing the entire oratorio two performances Saturday night and Sunday afternoon.
And I should also add that we are so honored to have at the harpsichord Francis Bedford.
Ah, wow.
And every performance of Messiah we've done since 1993, Fran Bedford has been at the harpsichord.
Oh, I am so happy to hear that.
Well, we're so honored.
Oh,
so
that honored. Is very, very, very good. And how large a group of singers are doing the chorus?
It's the smallest group. It's about 28, smallish by romantic proportions.
Sure.
But it was typical size for Handel's time.
Right. I was just going to say that sounds very, very appropriate and in that size room as well. So fantastic. So two performances of Handel's Messiah that will be coming up this weekend. We'll play a little more of the work a little bit later on in this hour. We do want to return to Carthage's Christmas Festival and three performances this weekend. So I know there are a lot of disappointed people who have enjoyed experiencing it in person, and that's just not going to be possible today because of the limited season. Say a quick word about that. About just how limited the seating is and so on.
One of the really great things that came out of COVID is we've always just done general seating in the chapel, and in order to accomplish this, the seating that we need to do now, we've actually labeled the rows and numbered the seats of the whole chapel. Mm. So now we have a way of kind of people knowing where they're going to sit before they get there, instead of having to kind of come and line up and run to the seat they want. And so they can actually order a ticket for the seat that they want. But we do have essentially half the number of less than half, because we've blocked off the first three rows all around the stage. And then the rest of the pew seating is every other person. I think the chapel seats just a little over between 1,200 and 1,300, and so I think we have about 600 seats that are available, or that aren't available. Make that clear. but that people were able to buy the tickets, and I think we sold out in about a week. And it always goes the same way. Saturday night almost immediately fills up, and then Sunday night, and then Friday night is the last night that fills. But so that was very quick. And we do because we are offering to our students and faculty our open dress rehearsal on Thursday night, just because there are many who just couldn't get tickets and would want to see their children performing, and So that's available to them.
And it is, I have to say, for those that have to, in a sense, settle for watching the live stream, that Carthage really has spared no expense in terms of making sure that experience is as fine as it can be in terms of the number of cameras and lighting and so on. I mean, it really is possible to capture its magic to a remarkable degree, it seems to me.
Yeah, and they tend to make improvements every year, try and get things improve the sound or the video quality or things like that. We are always trying to make it better than it's been the year before.
When I asked you about some musical high points as far as your own groups are concerned, you're conducting two of the ensembles that are singing this weekend. You mentioned a piece called Gaudete by Michael Engelhardt.
That's right.
That the treble chorale is going to be singing. We'll hear just a little bit of it, but do you want to say something about this first?
Yeah, so there are many, many, many arrangements of this medieval Christmas carol. And perhaps Michael's is the most unique in that it preserves the melody and but kind of funkifies the rhythm that goes on. And it uses metallic percussion. And so we actually, the percussion have basically a break drum and a train rail that they're beating on, and other pieces of metal. There's a cymbal that's laid on a drum, and that creates a different kind of sound. And so there's all these kind of metallic, very rhythmic things going on. And it opens kind of making you think it's going to be this medieval carol, and then all of a sudden the percussion come in and change the whole character.
Wow. So here it is. These happen to be young musicians from Millikan in a performance.
And that's Michael Engelhardt used to teach there, and he wrote the song for them. The premiere, yeah.
Okay, well then this is even more appropriate. Yeah. So here is a little bit of Michael Engelhardt's Gaudete. Just a little taste of Michael Engelhardt's setting of Gaudete, which will be performed this weekend at the Christmas Festival by the treble chorale at Carthage under the direction of Dr. Peter Dene. I wanted to be sure to ask you about what I would think is kind of a tricky challenge in terms of choosing the piece that will be kind of the mass choir piece in which all of the ensembles join together. And you can handle that moment in a lot of different ways, but it's a tricky choice, it seems to me. Tell us what kind of goes into your thinking as you search the world for just the right piece to kind of bring everybody together.
Yeah, so I think back to 2019, our last time together, and we did Rosephony Powell's, oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of it, but it was a gorgeous piece for orchestra and choir, and actually I had to fight to get it. They were supposed to publish it, but they hadn't, and then because I had heard a recording of it, and And so that, oh man, I wasn't ready for. I talked about it. I wish I could remember the name because it also had a, the poet of the text that that she used was a Harlem Renaissance poet, that just the words were so incredible, and so I mean it's just the same with almost any music I pick for choir for my choirs. Is the text has to speak to me, and it has to, and I have to think that it's going to speak to my students, and then that it will speak to the audience, and then that the text is somehow married with the music, and that it's all one. And I think Rollo talked a little bit about this when I was here a couple weeks ago, how he thought about text and. And so this year we're singing an arrangement of the First Noel, and that's honestly one of my favorite carols. And Mac Wilberg, who is the conductor of the Mormon. Help me out,
Mormon Tabernacle
Choir, yes, arranged it. There's some beautiful recordings of them singing it, and it brings back. I'm sure for you too, Greg, really fond memories of Weston Noble was here at Carthage in the early 2000s and conducting the Carthage Choir, and he did this same arrangement with piano, with Greg playing piano, and that was an amazing experience for the students in the Carthage Choir, and so I always had that in my memory, and I thought that this was I've always wanted to do it again, and now that we have back in probably 2006 when he was there, or 2007, we didn't have an orchestra then, and we do now. And so this is the right time to do it, I think. And it does. It sets a mood. It's the last piece that we sing before we go into the service of light, which is the one part of the performance that doesn't change from year to year.
Right.
And so I think it sets the mood really well. Sometimes we have just the opposite piece selected, something that's really joyful and rhythmic and bright, but this kind of eases you into this next part of the service. Yeah.
Let's hear just a little bit of Mac Wilberg's extraordinarily beautiful setting of First Noel.
Thank you.
I just hate to interrupt that extraordinarily beautiful arrangement of for the first Noel.
So you'll have to wait until Friday or Saturday or Sunday to hear the end.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
Teaser.
And that will be the combined choral ensembles and the orchestra of Carthage joining in a performance of that, in many ways a culminating moment for this weekend's Christmas festival. And again, if you would like to experience it, you have to experience it via live stream, because all of the free tickets are gone. You go to carthage.edu, and I don't remember exactly what you search for. I think probably the best thing is to search for live stream,
right,
in the search bar.
Yeah, live stream.
And then you'll be given a list of those events that are available. And, of course, right at the top of the list will be these three performances, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, at Carthage College's Siebert Chapel. And Dr. Peter Dene, the coordinator of all of this enormous undertaking, I appreciate you joining us today on the Morning Show to talk about it.
Yeah, I always enjoy being with both of you.
Very good. And Dr. James Kinchin, we want to return to Handel's Messiah in our closing couple of minutes and hear a little bit of my favorite chorus, which is "For Unto Us a Child is Born."
Okay.
Do you want to say anything real brief about this wonderful chorus before we hear just a couple minutes of it?
Well, it's another indication of Handel's impressive genius, because this comes from an earlier work that he did.
I didn't know that.
It's one of about four or five pieces in the oratorio that he recast. That's one. "And He Shall Purify" is another. "His Yoke Is Easy" is another. And when you listen to it, you don't have any inkling that it is intended for anything.
I never would have imagined such a thing possible. Wow. That's incredible.
It's a genius.
Wow. Well, we'll listen to it with different ears now. So here are the last couple of minutes of "For Unto Us a Child is Born" from Handel's great oratorio Messiah, again being performed twice this weekend at Parkside, Saturday night at 7 p.m., Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. in Francis Bedford Hall. And the Saturday night performance is available via live stream. Go to uwp.edu for more information. Dr. James Kinchin and Dr. Peter Dene, thank you for being part of this joyous and festive morning show today here on WGTD.
Thank you for having me.
It's a minute before 9 o'clock here on WGTD, FM 91.1, your gateway to public radio. Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll be spending a portion of the hour with Trista Piccola, who is the Deputy Director of the Department of Health and Human Services for Walworth County. And we will be getting a COVID-19 update from her in terms of how the good folks of Walworth County are doing and some of what they are doing, that is the Department of Health, in terms of preparing for widespread